You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. I wish it was under better circumstances. Later on in the episode, we're going to have an interview with Kevin Shields of Detention, a band you might not know, but probably should. A band from the early to mid-80s. Super cool. We're going to have an interview with him and play some tracks. But listen, it's the day after the election, man. And Trump won and Harris lost. And it friggin' sucks, man. And I don't have any advice for you. I got to say, it's a sad day for the USA. Trump is horrible. He's horrible. And the scary part is he wasn't elected because people, quote, liked his policies for the most part, except for like the really sickoids, you know, the real sick, you know, religious people and the real sick hatred people. He was elected because people just voted for the cult of personality. You know what I mean? Like, I think even if Jesus Christ himself ran against Trump, Trump still would have gotten elected. And so it represents a total loss of rationality in the U.S. population, or at least more than 50% of the U.S. population. And it's scary. Like, after Trump won the first time and things were just chaotic, I thought maybe people would learn their lesson. Because, I mean, people forget it. Like, it was a total shit show for 4 years. And Biden got elected, and it was kind of a return to normality. And I thought, you know, all right, well, all right. That was kind of a blip, but things are normal again, you know. And now Trump, after being a felon, I don't think you should be able to run for president if you're a felon. I mean, really, I think that should be in the Constitution. If you're a felon, you can't run for being president or any office, maybe. Or actually any federal office, I think, if you're a felon, or maybe even any state office, you shouldn't be able to run if you're a felon. But I fear, Em, that maybe this is a real tipping point, and maybe we'll never return to normal. Maybe it's going to be totally whacked out whack jobs forever. You know, and it's real scary. And I don't have a solution. I don't have an answer. I don't have any advice. It's a scary time and a shameful time in U.S. history. Extremely shameful. And I hate beating on the USA. I'm very pro USA. I'm very pro the Constitution. I'm very pro the American dream. I'm very pro most USA ideals. But this is bad. And this is real freaking bad. And it's depressing. And it's sad. And it's super scary. And I don't know, Em. I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. Because, I mean, the fact of the matter is I would say most people on the left or with sense really did put in the energy. They really were like, let's campaign against Trump. You know, let's, you know, get out there and vote. And he still won because there's so many people that just are voting for the cult of personality. Like Trump got his ass handed to him in the only debate that he actually had the courage to do with Harris. Yep. He got his ass handed to him. Like, anytime they asked him any policy, he would just go off on a tangent. Says, I'm the best. Everyone else is the worst. I'm the best. Like, there's no one listening to Trump is like, yes, I agree with that policy, or yes, he makes a good point. He doesn't make any points. He just spits out bile. That means nothing, and people still voted for him. So that's a bad sign, Em. That's a real bad sign. I don't know. I don't even have any words of encouragement. It's bad, Em. It's real bad. So yeah, that's where we're at, Em.
Yeah, being on the internet, being like, you know, kind of around it, and seeing people who live in the States and have their reactions, it's a scary time. It's awful and everything that you said, 100%. But the thing that we have to keep in mind is, like, not to let apathy, like, win out. There is hope. The whole thing is doing with your communities, like investing in mutual aid and like making sure that you're showing up and you're politically active all of the time instead of just every 4 years. Like, there's so much hate and vitriol around that's being directed at, like, the trans and LGBTQ plus community.
And not to mention women, and like women health, like that's a huge, like, abortion, and not even just abortion, women health services is directly under attack by these dark ages whack jobs. Like, what do you care if what a woman does with her medical condition? Like, that's bizarre. And that's like, people talk about, you know, like, Hamas and all that stuff, you know, it's the same thing, man. Controlling women. It's the same friggin' thing. You know what I mean? It's bad. And I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm controlling women now by interrupting them. I'm controlling women here. Go ahead, Em.
Hey, no, I was going to add that on too, and it's, be like, you up. Know, it's so fucked up. Like, it's absolutely, like, ridiculous. And that's the thing, like, all of the people who campaign for him who are women who can, like, bear children or whatever, who
bizarre.
Well, no, because they're safe. Because if they needed it, they get it. Right?
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right about that.
And everybody else can't have it. No one else can, like, have that a freedom or autonomy. So, like there's so many places out there, like Shout Your Abortion and Plan C Pills, that are like doing great stuff, that are working to make abortion and reproductive care accessible and like get the resources out there. There's needabortion.org, which also, if you go to it, it gives you all of the information and resources that you need state by state, if you're dealing with an unsafe situation. They have a quick escape button that will shut it down, as well. There's all of these things, where it's there's all these like resistance movements that are investing in people and investing in community. And those are things that definitely, need to be front and center at all of this, throughout all of this, because it's you can't let the spark die. You can't let the fight die, because if you do, they win. And it's like exactly like look at how fucking archaic this is, right? Like there needs to be such pushback. There needs to be such like we're not gonna stand for this. We're gonna take any kind of action we can to help ourselves and help the people who actually matter, instead of
I agree, but
profits.
I think people are just exhausted because they worked so hard to beat him the first time, and now he's back stronger than ever. You know what I mean? Like literally, he's worse than ever, So I think people are exhausted, So I don't
There's
know.
nothing, yeah, there's nothing like wrong with that. You have to rest up and whatever, but you have to keep going. It's like it's bleak, it's terrible, but it's happened, and it's kind of boots on the ground time.
Yeah, I mean,
It's
you used to be able to depend on the Supreme Court to be rational, but now
uh-uh.
the Supreme Court is stacked with like five total whack jobs too. The Supreme Court, and like, damn, the Supreme Court, damn. Well, we should play a song, Em. Should we play Bikini Kill? Should we play Scowl? Should we play Stevie Nicks? What should we play, Em?
Ooh, let's do Bikini Kill. Let's keep
Yeah.
her
All right, we'll play Bikini
classic.
Kill. Actually, let me look up what song we should play real quick. I mean, not Rebel Girl because everyone always plays that, and that's a little too on the nose. But there's much more fitting Bikini Kill songs for this scenario.
Is
Kathleen
this
Hanna,
Psychic
save
Death?
us. Save. Let's see here. You want to play Psychic Death?
Yeah.
All right, we'll play that. This is Psychic Death by Bikini Kill. We'll be back and we'll talk about other stuff. But we're not gonna talk too much politics tonight, just because I don't think it's really gonna serve much. I mean, we're preaching to the choir. People are bummed out, big time. So we're not going to talk too much politics tonight. We're just going to make fun of As They Lay Dying. And then we're going to have an interview with Kevin from Detention later on. So anyway, this is Psychic Death by Bikini Kill, and we will be right back. we're back. What do you want to talk about on the show tonight? So, but as he lay dying,
What's going on
did
with
we?
us? I lay
So,
dying.
I was actually a little incorrect at Punk News. I said all the members quit as they lay dying, but the guitarist Phil Scarro did not quit, but now he did quit.
Oh,
So
God.
now the only guy left in As He Lay Dying is the singer Tame Lambesis. And oh no, that's right. We talked about this last week, didn't we? I remember it happened while
Oh,
we
yeah, we did. Yeah, because
Yeah, so
it was breaking news. Wait, I think Tim Lambesis has released a statement.
Ooh,
One minute. I saw it on somewhere.
let's see.
Let me
It'll probably
check.
be the As He Lay
Oh,
Dying.
wait, nope. That was two days ago. Okay. Do you want to hear what he said?
Yeah, go ahead and read it.
So he has finally addressed the situation, taking to Instagram to issue a statement that says, "I needed some time to process all that has happened recently with As I Lay Dying. It saddens me to think about the behaviors, communication, and patterns of interaction that led up to the tour cancellation. Phil and I no longer saw eye to eye, personally, creatively, or financially. Discussions during this time prompted his decision to depart first, with each of the touring members deciding to leave shortly after, as they were not interested in going on without him. Unfortunately, that wasn't the order in which everything was made public, as some statements were rushed out during a chaotic time in response to rumors. I fully support each of the guys' decisions to leave and believe at this time it is best for everyone. With that being said, my door will always remain open to discussing anything directly, as I believe closing communication leads to many assumptions and problems of its own. Now, regarding what's next. As I Lay Dying was founded on persistence and determination. For anyone who is familiar with the foundational years from 2000 to 2004, you know that more than 20 people, and then in parentheses, whom I'm incredibly grateful for, have come and gone to help bring to life this vision I've had in my head since I was 19 years old. I look forward to building a new team and creating an atmosphere that is supportive, positive, and fosters a creative environment. We'll be releasing a new single on November 15th. I'm proud of what we've created, and I look
This
forward
guy
to
wastes
sharing
no
it.
time, man. This guy wastes no time.
Shit, the whole band's left. Okay, let's put something out.
No, not shit. Not shit. The whole band that just I hired a hitman to kill my wife, went to jail, got out, got married, got divorced. The whole band quit under mysterious circumstance. I'm gonna put out a single.
Oh, yeah, yep. What a mess. That's
And
not a good idea, any
first of
of
all, I'm.
this.
You think this is going to slow them down at all? I think not. I think As They Lay Dying is just going to keep doing what they do.
I think they're going to keep doing what they do. I don't know anyone who listens to them, though.
They still sell a lot of tickets, Em, a lot of tickets. Like people just don't care. You know what I mean? They just don't care.
How do they not care? Like the man has
Hired a hitman to
done,
kill his wife.
like I was going to say, been complicit in murder, almost attempted murder.
They don't care. Well, look at the president. People, he's a felon.
He's a rapist.
He's a rapist. You know, he's cheated on every wife that he's ever had. He's, you know, he quote grabs him by the pussy. People don't care him, or maybe they like it. They like that. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah,
Ugh.
I think the misogyny is pretty present.
I said I wasn't going to talk about politics too much, but ugh. Let's see here.
Very, very ugh. Wait, can I
Yeah.
like do a little politics thing for
Yeah, go
Canada?
ahead.
Okay. So one thing that happens with American elections is sometimes Canadians will be like, "Ah, oh, it's not that bad up here," or whatever. Okay, we have an election that's going to be in the next year or so, and we're not facing Donald Trump level of bad, but we are facing pretty bad with Pierre Poilievre. And also we have the People's Party, who have gained a seat or two in Parliament, which is pretty scary. So we need to make sure that we're like this has lit a fire under our asses too. So we support the like our American friends who are going through this. We do everything we can to help them. And we also make sure that we're putting time and effort into our communities, into the parties that we can that have good ideas, you know, like the NDP. Who can actually make a change and are advocating for better lives for Canadians, instead of, kind of Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative Party riding the alt-right train, which they've been doing for years and have only gotten worse. So keep an eye out for that. Don't be fooled.
Well, there you have it. Let's see here. Yeah, man, it's a shitty time.
It's terrible.
Yeah,
Anyways,
it's bad.
it's
Yeah,
not good.
man, not good, not good, man. Yeah, I'm pretty bummed out. Again, I'm pretty bummed out. Let's see. Let's do a happy story. You know, how about
Yeah, I'm
that?
up for a happy story. Let's what's something cool that's happened?
Need a couple cool. Nice is trying to get better records. That's a cool band. Talk
Oh
about Nice. That's cool. It's a cool band. Talk about Nice, M.
yeah. Yeah. Nice have released their well they've signed to the Re Get Better Records, which is a great record label, lots of cool stuff coming out on there, and they released a new song and video on there called Lovesick, and it's the third song that they've released so far this year, obviously first on the label, and it's kind of continuing this like thing that was in the previous album, or sorry, the previous single, which I believe was called Crazy, where the lead vocalist is kind of like stalking the other members of the band, and and stuff, and it gets kind of sexy and kind of like horror inspired, and it's just the visuals are really cool, the song's great. They have great energy, and I think they're gonna, well, they're a great fit with Get Better Records. Get Better Records has an incredible roster of bands.
Yeah, Get Better Records
Yeah.
has been adding like a lot of really cool bands here and there. They've got effed up.
Yeah.
Here's Collective, I think, right?
Yes.
Nice. Let's see who else, man.
Vile.
Kayetana, who I even like. Vile, who's cool. Yeah, a lot
Yeah.
of cool bands. Yeah.
They have lots of great stuff. And Nice is awesome. So, I mean, it's a good match. Excited to hear more. I hope this leads into like an album or maybe an EP. A
Hawkeye.
longer release. Buckeye, yeah. Their album, Next Time was so good, and then they like broke up and it was like, no, don't leave.
I saw Hawkeye open for Marissa. No, Screaming Females. Oh, Susie True. And
Oh,
remember,
Susie True,
was it you
yeah.
who loved that band, Susie True? Are
Yeah.
they broken up? Are they still around? I haven't heard a lot about them
Oh,
lately.
Susie True are still around. They're doing a lot of touring right now. So they played Fest. They play like Down to Fest. They've been really hitting the road in the US the past probably 6 months. So if you're on like the West Coast, that's kind of where they're going because they're based in California. And they're incredible. Sentimental Scum is their most recent release. I talked to Lexi, the lead singer, about that last year. And it's
Buckeye.
fun. Buckeye. It's
Susie
fun to
True.
say.
Buckeye. And you know what the Buckeye were?
yeah, it's Greece. It's the ancient Greece. It's
Bunch of drunk, naked grease chicks that go
yeah.
around eating human flesh. Pretty rad.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
The
Come on.
future we need.
Snoop and Dr. Dre are putting out an album together, and it will be the first completely produced by Dr. Dre Snoop album, since of course the iconic Doggy Style. M, are you a
Yes.
Snoop slash Doggy Style slash Dr. Dre fan? And do you have high hopes or low hopes or medium hopes for Missionary out December 13th?
I saw a picture of the vinyl. It looks like a condom.
Really?
Yeah,
Good
the
look.
outside looks like a condom, and then the I think the record's like white or something. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Although I
Yeah.
gotta say, you know who did a record that looks like a condom before Snoop Dogg?
Who?
NOFX on their album Ridden.
Oh, right. Yeah. That is
I was,
right.
and also I'm actually pretty annoyed because I was trying to convince one of my clients to make a record, like a special edition of a record shaped like a condom, and they didn't want to because they were like, a condom means is safe and not dangerous. I'm like, No,
Oh
it's
my
kind of fun.
God.
I'm like, it's kind of funny and edgy. You know what I mean? And I really should have pushed him because I wanted to
Yeah.
submit the album cover to win a Grammy. You know what I mean? But he just wouldn't do it, and he wouldn't do it. I'm very annoyed about this. And now Snoop Dogg
Should have
has
done
done it. I'm so annoyed. Wow.
it.
So annoyed.
More condom packaging. And like it should come with like free condoms or something. 'Cause it's like, come on, you gotta be safe. You gotta prevent the.
Looks like 50 and Eminem are probably going to be on the record. Tom Petty and Jelly Roll are going to be on the record.
Yep.
Sting's going to be on the record. Method Man.
There's so many people.
Do you think it's going to be a good record or not?
I have never listened to a full Snoop Dogg album. I have listened to Snoop Dogg songs. But I don't know how they like flow together.
Well, Snoop Dogg has got a ton of albums. Like he's got like probably 20 albums, 15 albums. Really,
Wild.
there's only one that's actually super good all the way through. Doggy Style is pretty awesome all the way through. Doggy Style, The Chronic, and what's one? What's the, not the Dog Pound? Was it Warren G? Yeah, Warren G. Those albums are kind of considered to be like a trio of albums. Back in the day, and by back in the day, I mean like not even like that long ago. People used to say The Chronic was the best one. But anymore, I think Doggy Style is the best one, frankly. And I like Doggy Style a lot. But what's interesting about, I mean, I generally like Snoop. What's interesting about Snoop is he's a great rapper, but he's really not a good lyricist at all. Like most of his lyrics are like la-di-da-di-day, la-di-da-di-do, or Snoop to the D-O-double-G, y'all. It's like he doesn't really rhyme about anything. He just like calls out hooks, which is why he's been so effective to a degree. But you know, the Doggy Style album is a really fun listen. He's got a whole bunch of other albums, and frankly, I can't sit through any other one because they're overlong, they're boring. Plus, he says some stuff that's not cool, and in a way, I'm a little annoyed by it.
What do you mean?
Everyone loves Snoop, and I like Snoop. Like, ah, Snoop's at the Olympics, and Snoop and Martha Stewart. Ah, ha, ha, Snoop, ah. You know that character, that Snoop. But he's like totally gangster on Doggy Style, and he says some kind of uncool stuff on a lot of his records. And so I'm a little offended or annoyed that he's like, oh, Snoop's family friendly. It's like, no, Snoop's main thing was that he's not family friendly. Snoop's dog is that he's Bootsy Collins as a gangster. That's what Snoop is, you know? And so it annoys me that like he kind of flips his personas a little bit to whatever suits him the most. You know what I mean? And also, he says some kind of not cool stuff on some of his records. But you know, a lot of artists do. I mean, Morrissey says some kind of not uncool stuff. So and so is John Lydon. So I guess I got to give
Yeah.
Snoop a pass there. So, anyways, I mean, I'm a Snoop fan, although I think some of the stuff he says is not cool. But I like Doggy Style a lot, and I like some of his singles. And I think his album will not be that good. And here's why: Dr. Dre is one of these. He used to be. One, I would never say he was the best producer in hip hop, but certainly one of the best, top three probably. And so he kind of like lost his way though, and started to overproduce everything. And if you remember, he put out that record called Compton, which was supposed to be his third and final record and his massive comeback, and it just was not good at all. It was like so many ideas jammed together, and all like it seemed to be a very confused record here. And if we go back to both The Chronic and Doggy Style, is even though The Chronic is a Dr. Dre record, it's really a Dr. Dre and Snoop record. And I think on The Chronic, technically, I think Snoop actually raps more than Dr. Dre if you do it minute by minute. But within like with the Chronic is Snoop and Dr. Dre are all over the record, and then like RBX shows up here and there, and Lady of Rage shows up here and there. So it's almost like a posse record in that it's people keep coming and going throughout the record, which makes it feel very much like an album. With Doggy Style, it's mostly Snoop. Actually, the funny thing about Doggy Style is like Snoop doesn't even rap till like halfway through the second song, because like George Clinton is on the first record, and then Dr.
Oh.
Dre comes on, and like Snoop is almost barely on the record, frankly. But you know, Snoop and Dre are on it, more Snoop, and you know, George Clinton's on it a couple of times. And Daz is on there a couple of times, and like all these people on there a couple of times, people keep coming and going. With Compton, the Dr. Dre record, it's like it had like a different vocalist on every track, sometimes two or three different vocals on every track, and there was real no flow to it, no consistency, no cohesion to it. It just felt like a bunch of scraps stitched together, you know. But and then sometimes a bunch of scraps stitched together, it makes a record interesting, i.e. the Beatles' White Album, i.e. Rudimentary Penis Cacophony. But Compton didn't feel like that. It just felt like just here's another rapper, here's another rapper, here's half of a rapper, here's a hit, you know. And so looking at this track list, every track has like a different guest, but there's no, it doesn't circle back. It's a different guest star on every track. You know what I mean? And so
Yeah.
I find that when you have a different guest star on every track, an album really doesn't have that much consistency and really just does kind of fall apart, or here's some songs and here's some songs. So I think there might be some pretty good or okay singles on here, but I don't think it's going to be a great comeback record, frankly. So yeah, that's my take, Em.
Yeah. No, that's a good take. I like the picture you used for this too.
From the Olympics,
Yeah.
and to a degree, I was a little offended that they had Snoopy, the ambassador to the Olympics,
Why?
because I mean, A, why does Snoop get everything? You know, he gets Martha Stewart show, he gets this commercial, he gets that commercial. Shouldn't that have gone to like an Olympian or even like a great teacher or something? And the answer is, John, well, they don't draw in the viewer eyes like Snoop does. You know what I mean? So it's a money decision. You know what I mean? But my point is, if we're able to put the money thing aside, which we can't, but I really think I should have went to an Olympian or someone like that, you know what I mean? Or a great teacher or someone that has really contributed positively to, you know, not that Snoop hasn't contributed positively, but he's got lyrics where he talks about, you know, slapping women and this and that, you know. And I'm not against that. I think he should legally be allowed to do that. And he's a gangster, and I
What?
enjoy what?
You think you should legally be allowed to slap women?
No, sing about slapping women. He should be
Oh.
allowed to like sing about being a gangster if that's what he wants to do. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But then he's a gangster. You know what I mean? And if you're a gangster, you're a quote bad guy. That's the point of being a gangster. And so I'm a little annoyed that now he's Mr. Nicey Wicey, you know, and that's not what Snoop used to be. Or even, I mean, if you listen to even some of his most recent albums, he's still gangster. And I respect that he's still gangster, but I'm annoyed that the media engages in this lie where, oh, Snoop's cuddly, where no, Snoop's not cuddly, he's Snoop Dogg, you know. So why shouldn't the Olympic ambassador have been Simone Biles? Well, she was in the Olympics, I think, but you
She
know,
was in
someone
the
like
Olympics.
Simone Biles or somebody like that, you know. Or why shouldn't have been trying to think someone else that, you know, did some really cool stuff, like someone that raised a bunch of money for, you know, for Planned Parenthood. Or, you know, anything like that, you know what I mean? Or teacher from an inner city that makes $35,000 a year and spends their own money to really help out the students and is very dedicated to being a teacher in the inner city. Anything like that, I'd be fine with, you know. I'm just annoyed that why does Snoop get everything? You know, that's what I'm saying.
I think the Olympic thing was more like he's there to tee off LA.
Yeah, but he's not even from LA. He's from Long Beach.
Isn't that, well, it's in California.
Well, so I mean, I could find any number of
Don't
valid people from LA. You know what I mean?
Sure. Is Dr. Dre from LA?
He's from Compton. Compton's LA, yeah. But actually, he's not even from
Okay.
Compton. I think he's technically from Crenshaw, which is like right, like basically, his Compton's like right next to. I remember there was a thing where, like, I'm trying to remember who it was. I can't remember who it was. It was someone talking about how, like, Dre isn't actually from Compton, or maybe it was Ice Cube who's not technically from Compton. He's from like one city over, and it's by seeing straight out of Compton, it's not like he's from like a suburb. He's from like a rough area, but
Right.
like he's rapping about an area that's like in conflict with Compton or something like that. So it'd be like being from Philadelphia and singing like straight out of, you know, Camden or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the opposite. So it's like, but they did that for artistic reasons, which I'm not against that. You know,
Right.
I'm just saying, why does Snoop get everything, and why is Snoop presented as cuddly when he's not cuddly? You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'm annoyed that, like, you
Sure.
know, Biden says one or two bullshit things, which are bullshit, and he's canceled forever. Snoop has said way worse things. Everyone thinks he's a cuddly bear, you know? And the answer is because he's got more charisma and he's better at wielding his charisma. I mean, Snoop's main thing is that he's overflowing with charisma, and that's why I like him, you know? But that being said, it's a little annoying to me when there were so many other options for the Olympics, which is supposed to represent, I guess, wholesomeness to a degree, or at least achievement, you know, in certain areas, which Snoop doesn't really represent any of that, you know. And I'm not anti-Snoop. I like Snoop. I'm a Snoop fan, you would agree. I just don't think, like, why Snoop Olympics? It doesn't make sense to me.
I think it's funny that Olympics is like a wholesome thing or whatever when it's like the origins are like nude.
Well, why, but and why is nude being bad? Aren't you sex positive?
Well, yeah, they're not having sex. They're just like hanging out.
So what's wrong with that, Em?
Nothing, but I mean,
You said it wasn't wholesome, though.
well, there's lots of holes.
That's
So
wouldn't that
I
be
guess
wholesome?
technically it's
I do agree with you, though,
wholesome.
that like the ancient Olympics were nude. Like sprinting was nude, which really is not conducive to sprinting. You know what I mean? Like that's weird, you know?
You're
Or like
not
wrestling,
aerodynamic.
was nude. It's like why? Like that's weird. That is weird. But you know, the ancient Greeks
Yeah,
were really weird sometimes, like really weird. So yeah, man. Anyways, I'm mad about this album cover, Em. I'm so mad about this album cover. Now
is the
I can't
yeah.
even do it. Of course, NoFX already did it.
But well, yeah, I forgot that was a condom.
I mean, it's basically the same cover as the NoFX album cover. It's like the same exact thing, really, you know?
Yeah. Oh, they even have like the little Trojan dude on it.
I like that the Trojan dude smoking a dube. That's funny.
I guess it's Snoop. Is it? And he just has the helmet.
What do you think of Sting being on it, Em?
An odd choice. But again, Sting has done a bunch of different stuff, so I mean it probably fits in. I'd like to hear how he what he does. I want
He
to
did
hear
a whole
Sting rap.
album with Shaggy.
Oh,
I actually think that's kind of cool. But like
that's cool.
I love the first three Police records. The second two, I'm still trying to come around to. The Sting solo is so insanely bad. But I gotta say, one of the things that's interesting about Doggy Style is Snoop did have some left of center guests. For example, he had the Dramatics on it, which of course is not that crazy, but it was kind of cool that he had a 70s soul group on his Gangsta Hip Hop record, you know? So I do like when Snoop or Dre kind of pulls in stuff that you wouldn't expect, pulls in artists that you wouldn't expect them to be on, and it fits well. Although actually I think this Sting track is going to stick out like a sore thumb. Like I think it's going to be like weird, you know. But I'm all for them having interesting, and Tom Petty's on too, but that's probably
Yeah.
the track is
Well,
called
that's
Last
gonna
Dance
be,
with Mary
yeah.
Jane, so it's probably just a sample of Tom Petty from Last Dance with Mary Jane, you know.
Yeah, and then Jelly Roll's gonna do a part.
Honestly, I think that song is probably going to be terrible, Em. What do you think?
I think if it was like Tom Petty doing the chorus and there was no Jelly Roll, I think it would be okay. That's what I think. And I mean, like, Jelly Roll could be on another song. It just feels like if you're gonna do something with somebody who's deceased, kind of keep them.
And I still gotta get that Mount Westmore album, which is horrible. Do you remember Mount Westmore, Em?
Oh, yeah, we talked about that on the podcast. Those
Talk
were
about some.
some real bad lyrics.
They were real. Some talk about a record that like it was like Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, Too Short, and E-40, like the biggest hip hop group ever, and it just nosedived so hard. It's like God damn, like you have to
Was
work to make
awful.
it was awful. It was awful. Like it's amazing that you could bring in that many rappers, which are of varying talent. None of them are bad rappers. On the fact of the matter is, Ice Cube is both the best and worst rapper on that record. In that, at his height, Ice Cube was maybe the greatest rapper of all time. Well, tied, I guess, with KRS-One. But also, he's put out some really, really, really bad music too, like really bad music. And he low key supported Trump like 3 years ago
Yeah.
and tried to make it go away. So yeah, man, I mean, that record totally nosedived, Adam. Totally.
Not good. Again, things that might have been okay on paper, but nope.
What do you think it's like putting that much work into a record and just forgetting it? You know, it's like,
Well, it's done now. We're moving on to the
wow.
next thing.
I do have
That
to
would
get
be
that to,
awful.
I do have to get that to complete my collection, though, Em.
I don't think it's gonna be very expensive, so I think you're in the clear.
Should I pre-order Snoop Dogg Missionary, Em? I probably shouldn't.
Can you still get the condom cover without it? without pre-ordering it?
Probably.
Then I don't think you need to.
There's a picture disc version where the record itself looks like the record looks like a condom. That's kind of funny, Em.
I'm looking this
Damn.
up.
I know they're going to submit this to the Grammys, Em, and I know it's going to win packaging. That's going to infuriate me so much. God damn. I should never snooze, Em. Every time I snooze, I lose.
Next time, just be like, nope, this is what we're doing.
I should have pushed it. I really should have. I'm mad that I didn't. Damn.
Oh, that's funny. Look at it. That is a
Anyway.
great idea.
Yeah, thanks. So let's see here. Anything else we can talk about tonight, Em? Let's see
Ah,
here.
where did I go? There, we are back. It's like I'm looking through punk news stuff and then.
We'll do one more story and then we'll do our interview with Kevin of Detention. Let's see here.
Yeah.
So yeah. So anyway, the party at Jabba's Palace, because everyone feels like he's partying right now, is this Sunday in Philadelphia. Mean Jeans, Soji,
Hey.
Blank Chrome and Membranes. It's gonna be a cool show.
Woo!
So yeah.
And
So
Soji are releasing a split with Winter Wolf.
yes,
In
check
December.
out. Hey, go, Emma, I'm gonna put you to task. Are you a
All
Bite Me
right.
Bambi fan now, Em? Because we used to bash on Bite Me Bambi, and I feel like you're a
We
Bite Me
did.
Bambi fan now.
We did, and I like the last like two or three things they've released. So I am now a Bite Me Bambi fan.
What was the turning point?
I don't know if it was like there was a member change or a production change or something. I don't it like the last single, which was Do the Damn, just kind of clicked. I think because it maybe it had more teeth. Because some of this, like our biggest criticism of it was like it just sounded so like manufactured and there wasn't any like bite to it.
My biggest criticism, I was kind of creeped out by it. That was my biggest criticism.
Well, I kind of think, like, just with the new press picture and stuff, I kind of think there was a lineup change because everyone looks more or less kind of the same age-ish.
She was the singer was Talina was married to one of the guys. Is that guy still in the band or is he out of the band?
I'd have to check.
Maybe that's it. You know what I mean?
It could be that there was some tension and like bad stuff. Lineup. Is that gonna help me or no? But like her voice is incredible.
Well, they have it. M. Moore is now a Bite Me Bambi fan.
I didn't want to click on that, but that's cool. I thought that was
How about F Dub
not
putting out a
IMDb.
whole nother album, M? F Dub is cranking out the albums. Do you think F Dub is doing themselves a disservice by, like, honestly, I'm a huge F Dub fan. I still haven't totally absorbed the last album. And honestly, I love when bands crank out albums. Like, Melvins haven't been as in as much of a sprint as it has in the year. Like Melvins used to put out two or three records a year. Now they're quote only down to about one and a half a year. But F'd Up put out like three records this year, three LPs this year, and some singles, which is cool. And F'd Up used to be known for putting out like a ton of singles. But I
So
bought this record. I haven't even
much.
listened to it yet, Em. Do you think they're doing themselves a disservice by cranking all this stuff out, or what do you think the motivation for cranking out this much material is?
I have a feeling that they're going to disappear again.
You think?
And they're doing this to be like, hey guys, we're getting together because we want to be creative. And then we're all gonna like go our own ways for a little bit. So here's some stuff to tide you over. That would be my guess. I don't think it's doing them a disservice. It is kind of hard because I'm going through a bunch of stuff for like year end to try to get started earlier. So I'm not doing everything like the night before. And it's like, yeah, I haven't listened to it yet. I haven't listened to Someday. Right? That's a new one. Someday.
There's one day, another day, and
Yep.
someday.
Yeah.
And
Okay. I've only
what do you
listened
think?
to one song on Someday.
You know, I the last record, which was Another day, that's been my favorite so far, though I haven't really dived. What's the word? Dived or
Dove.
dove? Dove into the
Yeah.
newest one that much. I thought the last, actually, I was actually really surprised at how good Another Day was. It's definitely my favorite of the days one so far. Like, but I haven't dove into the newest one. But I'm still not sold on the day concept. Like they apparently they're like, what's the word I'm looking for? They're enamored with this concept of what can you do in a day. I'm like, all right, that's kind of an interesting idea, you know. Whereas me, I absolutely loved Year of the Dragon. They're like, or and Year of the Horse, right? Year of the Horse. They're like, let's write a whacked out like 60-minute song about a witch horse or Oberon. They're like, let's write this whacked out song about Oberon from Midsummer's Night's Dream, you know, and make him kind of evil. And so like I love like, but they're like, this song is about a day. I'm like, all right, you know, it's a day. That's a thing that happens is a day. And I'm not dissing on, I'm really not dissing on the band. I feel actually to go back to one thing is there was a song
Yes.
on, I think it was Another Day called Stimming, which
Oh, I
is
think that was someday, wasn't or not someday, one day.
okay. And stimming is what autistic people do in a repetitive fashion, what some autistic people do in a repetitive fashion. And it was written by Mike Halachuk, which makes a lot of sense. And so I feel like this obsession with a day, specifically 24 hours, kind of fits in line with that line of thinking, you know.
You were right. It was another day. My bad.
So I feel like maybe that's why we're so obsessed with day, you know. But that being said, I'm glad they're putting out a bunch of material. I haven't checked out this record yet. I'm psyched to. The last one was real good. And I gotta say, man, effed up still now, what, 25 years in, and 25 years still is one of the most exciting punk bands and bands. But actually, not to beat this horse to death, but to kind of close this out is where effed up used to be the center of cultural conversation, like Pitchfork used to cover every single move they made. Now they really don't get as much coverage, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so is that just the natural flow of things? Is that be how they've handled is that because of how they've handled their career? And in a way it is kind of cool in that like they don't get the amount of eyes on them like they used to, but they don't appear to care. They're still cranking out the material nonstop, which is very cool, you know.
Yeah.
The point being is, Em, I guess the point being, Em, is do you feel they've handled their career the best they could, or maybe they did spit out too much stuff? There was a definite change, like with David Comes to Life, which was astoundingly, wow, Em, 13 years ago,
Yeah.
13 years ago, David Comes to Life, wow, I didn't think it was that long. There was so much eyeballs on them, and then they put out Glass Boys, which didn't quite have the impact as before, you know. And I remember there was a huge build up to Dosha Dreams, which was an amazing record,
Very good.
but that really didn't get all the awards like Chemistry of Common Life and David Come to Life did. And then since then, they've kind of gone into sort of what we're just going to do our own thing, and if you want to come to the party, you can, but we're not necessarily trying to be in the forefront of cultural conversation. So I guess the question is, Em, do you think they handled it correctly, or should they have handled it a little differently?
I think they handled it correctly because I think they were doing what they wanted to do, and that really shows through. You know, I think if they were doing it in a more kind of like blueprinty way, we might not have gotten Zodiacs. We might not have gotten like three albums about days, you know, like stuff like that. We wouldn't have gotten all of the releases we have, right? It would have just been like, oh yeah, well, David Comes to Life did really well, so we're gonna do another David Comes to Life. And you know, but it's not going to be like Dose Your Dreams. It's going to be like exactly the same thing. So I think they did it as they wanted to. I think publications aren't focusing on them for whatever reason. I don't think it's their fault. I think it's just kind of, well, what's going to drive, you know, clicks and what's going to do this and what's going to do that. And maybe it's something to do with swearing in the name. Because all their videos on YouTube, even if you go to just like listen to a song and it's just the album art, so say it's like the album art for like Another Day or whatever, where it's just like the drawing, it gets flagged as like, inappropriate, and you have to sign in to say you're over 18, which is ridiculous.
And I forgot there's actually 4 Day albums. They put out so many albums, I forgot about an entire album.
Wait, okay, so we
There's
have,
1 Day, Another Day, Someday, and Who's Got the Time and a Half record. Do you remember that?
Oh, right. Because that was the, like, that's just the EP, right?
No,
Or is
that's the
that
record.
the redone stuff?
To celebrate the re-release of Another Day, they stayed up for 24 hours and made an entire album from scratch in 24
Right.
hours.
Right. They do so much. Periods of nothing, and then here have all of the music.
Well, they're cool. I
It's
would
great.
argue.
No complaints.
I would argue that it's cool that they did what they want to do, but on the other hand, Em, it's easier to continue to do what you want to do and to make music if you have those greenbacks coming in. You know, when you don't have to
Fair
worry about
enough.
rent, you know, when you can, like, let's use NOFX. And not that F'd Up would have, actually, arguably NOFX maybe could have been as big as NOFX because they were really at the center of discussion for KemCom and David. When
Yeah.
you know, I'm not even commenting on the quality of the material, but Fat Mike's got NOFX. He's got Co-Defendants. He's got Cokie the Clown. He's got his opera or whatever. Like, he's got his violin band or whatever.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
because he's
What
got
was
a
that?
lot of cash rolling in, he can just do whatever he wants artistically. You know what I mean? And to be
Yeah.
fair, maybe that hasn't resulted in a lot of great material, you know? But then again, F'd Up is doing what they want to do. It's not like they're not doing what they're clearly doing it just what they want to do. But here's what I'm saying is I'm almost like an overbearing parent, and then I fear they might burn out on that because when you keep putting out money to make stuff and you're not recouping it,
Right.
then like when you throw a punk show, if you can make 300 bucks or 200 bucks, you're like, wow, we had all this fun and I made 300 bucks. But when you lose 200 or 300 bucks, you're like, wow, I did all this work and I still lost money. And it kind of gets old after a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. So I guess what I'm saying is we don't really know because we don't really know what's going on inside. But I think maybe they could have handled things a little bit better to keep those greenbacks coming in, to stay at the forefront of conversation. To kind of maybe be like a guided by voices band where you're not, you know, people aren't always talking about you all the time, but every show you play, there's going to be 300, 400 people there. You're always going to sell 3,000, 4,000 vinyl records, you know? And so you don't really have to
Yeah.
worry about money as much because the money's going to keep coming in. So you can be daring, if you will, you know? But I love F'd Up. I actually haven't dove into the new stuff yet, but I loved Another Day. And I think what they should do, Em, is put out another straight up hardcore record with some freaky stuff on the top of it. A hardcore record, but not
Yeah.
just a hardcore record, like freaky experimentation here and there. I think that's what they should do, which basically kind of was Oberon, except for Oberon was more of a metal record. So
Yeah.
the punk version of Oberon, if you will, Em. That's what they should do.
That would be cool. Some like Dose Your Dreams hints like woven in.
Those Your Dreams is freaking awesome. Like, that was
That
a
is
really
so
freaking awesome record.
good.
I mean, honestly, like F'd Up is so good because Dose Your Dreams, into Year of the Horse, into Oberon, into the Day trilogy, like they really do keep. And right now, like I said before, my favorite part of F'd Up right now is the singles and the EPs where they get really crazy. But they really are just putting out like so much cool stuff, and like it's so much that I can't digest at all, which is cool because you can always go back and digest it. Like, for a while, the Melvins were putting out
Yeah.
like 3 records a year and singles, and you literally couldn't digest it all. But then that means there's always stuff to reconsume or consume for the first time and really enjoy the band. Whereas, like, I don't know, AC/DC puts out like one album every 9 years, and you like listen to it once and you're like, all right, I heard it, you know? So yeah.
Yeah,
So anyway,
rather more music.
next up right now, we're gonna have an interview with Kevin Shields of Detention, who are re-releasing their first single as a super deluxe 12-inch with a whole bunch of bonus tracks. So we're going to play Dead Rock and Rollers by Detention out now via Left 4 Dead Records. And we're going to talk to Kevin. And here we go right now.
Jimi Hendrix and controllers, they were out of controllers. Played a drug game, but they couldn't maintain. And now they're dead, dead, dead. Off themselves, but it makes buzz. Jimmy Morrison and Sid Vicious and John Belushi and John Bonham were weak, weak, weak. Couldn't take it at the peak. Dead rock and rollers, they were out of controllers. Guess they felt lame, so they snuffed their brains. And now they're dead, dead, dead. Why couldn't it be Barry Manilow? I mean, I was never crazy about John Lennon, but at least he didn't drown to death in his own pew. What about you, Jim Carroll? All your friends have. What are you waiting for? Do it! Dead rock and rollers, they were out of controllers. Well, the final solution, massive mind pollution, and they're dead.
And that was Dead Rock and Rollers off the reissue of the album, or mini album, Dead Rock and Rollers by Detention, the classic early to mid 80s punk band. The reissue is off Left 4 Dead Records, and we are here with Kevin Shields, bass player and founding member and one of the three Shields brothers from Detention. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm happy to be here, and thank you for having me.
So Left 4 Dead Records just reissued, I guess what you would call a deluxe reissue of the first single. The original Detention single was A-side Dead Rock and Rollers and B-side El Salvador.
That's
and
correct.
What Left 4 Dead Records did is they put those two tracks at 45 RPM on a 12-inch, and they put, I guess we would say, 8 bonus tracks on the B-side, so it's a super nice presentation.
Yes.
And so, Kevin, there's a lot of bands from the earlys and mid-80s that are, you know, they're on all these comps and stuff, and people are like, oh, yeah, it's cool, but, you know, If they came out today, people probably wouldn't care about them. What really caught my attention with Detention was I didn't know a whole lot about the band before I got this CD. I put it in, and this CD just whips front to back. It's funny. It's very punk. It's unique, and it's got
Thank
its own
you.
Styles. So I guess the first question is, I know there have been some Detention reissues here and there, but what's it like to have, I guess, this iconic single kind of properly re-released so people can check out the stuff that you did that really was kind of special?
It's hard to describe. I mean, I can't intellectualize it, and I try not to be like emotional about it. But it's surprising to me in a way, because when we were doing it, there was no thought really whatsoever about what will our legacy be, or, you know, what will we do to memorialize ourselves? It was never given a thought. You know, when you're in it, and you're doing it, it's just happening. It's your life, your lifestyle, and it just happens. And we never really looked at that. And that this thing is raising, you know, rearing its head again, you know, literally 40 years later it's pretty astounding. It's gratifying for me because it kind of lends a validation to it. I'd like to point out, I don't feel the need to be validated, you know, as a person or, you know, as a musician. However, that it's being paid attention to, you know, at this point in time, you know, is gratifying. In the back of my mind, it makes me very happy to think that someone else got into it, that, you know, we did this for our own amusement, that someone is coming along and still is interested in something of that nature. Very, very gratifying in that respect.
I guess we'll get into the history of Detention in a second, but until now, and even now, like, original copies of the single sell online for like $350, $400, $500. What does that say to you that like, singles that you probably should sell for like $2 or $3 are now $500, and people are willing to pay that for an artifact from your era?
An artifact, John?
An artifact, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've been to the Rock and Roll Museum, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum, and I don't know that dead rock and rollers will ever be featured there, but one never knows. I mean, the way things are going. But, you know, I mean, we got these copies and we would take it to like the local bars and show it to like our friends and our drinking buddies and go, look, we have an album. And they're like, oh, I want one, you know, and they'd have us sign it or something like that. So there's people out there that really, really should dig into their record collection. You know, there might be one of those things floating around in there, but you know, the true diehards are not selling those at any price, but it's hard to evaluate art. And I'm using art here with quotations on both sides. You know, if a, who was the New York artist, Basquiat, you know what I mean? Died young, and thereby, you know, immortalized himself. And now you can probably get one of his paintings for, I don't know, $1 million. Is that probably about the going rate for something like that? I saw somebody bought one of the 7 inches online, and it was a couple $100s, and it was pretty astounding. You know, that was just something that fell in our laps, and now it has value. That's puzzling, but you know what? It's more amusing than anything.
On the
and
back
no, John,
of
I'm not selling my copies, by the way. I'm actually, hanging on to them.
You know, right now, records, especially punk records from the late 70s and early 80s, are worth more than they've ever been. And a lot of punk guys from the first and second waves have, I'll just call them record creeps, creeping around and say, hey, sell me your collection. Have you had record creeps kind of crawl out of the woodwork and try to buy your stuff off you? And how did that feel if that happened?
Yes. Earlier this year, I moved permanently from New Jersey to upstate New York. And there was a lot of editing had to go on, shall we say, because when my wife and I moved in together, we had to kind of put together two apartments to make the one. Now, she has a house here. We live here permanently now in New York. So when we were leaving New Jersey to move here earlier in the year, a lot of stuff had to go. So the Goodwill store by us really just got basket after basket of clothes. And I gathered up about 3/4 of my record collection. Now, I've been buying records my whole adult life, pretty well, since adolescence. But I was one of those people in the 80s who was literally like a record collector. If I could find it and it was interesting, I would buy it. And I took about 3/4 of my record collection to the Princeton Record Exchange. Right. PREX. And I had no idea. I figured, and I had some rare stuff, man. I was one of the 5,000 people that owned the Suicide LP. You know, I had compilations that you're just not going to see them. All kinds of weird stuff. And I took it there. And I was hoping that, you know, hey, if I get like $1.25 out of it, you know what I mean? You know, $1.50, something like that. And the guy excitedly took my milk crates into the back room and said, I'll be with you in about so long. And he didn't come out. I didn't see him for about 45 minutes. Apparently, he was next door in his office on the internet looking at all this stuff. And eventually, Ann and I said, let's go get breakfast. And when I came back, they were ready for me. And the girl came up and she had a slip of her hand. And she goes, okay, we're gonna offer you $620. And that was like 3/4. That wasn't the real tasty stuff. So it paid for like the moving truck and the gas to put in the moving truck. So that was a pretty good deal. You know, sad for, you know, and they probably just turned it around and sold it in the store and they're welcome too. But I was pretty amazed. And the stuff I kept for myself, that's going to be interesting. People have asked me about that, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see about that.
Well, I wonder if some of Kevin's collection is now in my collection because I tend to go to Prince Record Exchange when the Juicy Halls come in. So who knows? But there is one question I wanted to ask you.
Feel free.
Detention has been bootlegged actually a number of times. And on the back of this reissue, it says logo and dead rock and roll's artwork by Jeff Jameson. You bootleg motherfuckers got to start paying him. So my, you know, there's two ways, there's two ways to look at bootlegs, and I'm usually in the first camp. And the first camp is you shouldn't ever bootleg an artist, especially if they're making money off their art, because you're literally robbing from them. There's so many other people to rob from. Don't rob from bands. But on the other side, there's the perspective of bands like the Screamers. If the Screamers were not bootlegged, they would not be known today, and they're one of the most iconic bands of all time. So yeah, in a way, the bootleggers did a service there. Where do you stand on the many bootlegs of Detention? There's at least three or four different sets of
bootlegs. Certainly. We've been featured on like compilations and things like that, where the the people producing it had our permission and our knowledge. But we've also had a number of mostly 7-inch vinyl that, you know, people would go, "Hey, I saw the other day in the store, I saw your new record." And I said, "Oh, really? That's interesting, seeing how there is no new record." And, you know, so you find out like after the fact. I personally don't mind it. And I'm aligned with my late brother, Paul, who was the vocalist. Our attitude was essentially, well, you know, we didn't make any money off it at the time, so do we expect to make money off it now? But even more so than that, we would rather have the music out there. If somebody else is making a buck off it, I mean, how much can you really make, you know, off of, Live in New Jersey, 83? So if we have no moral issue with it, and we don't need the money. So if somebody is interested enough to go out and do a pressing, even without our knowledge or our approval, and it's happened, our attitude really was, we would rather have the music be out there, you know, money or rights or whatever be damned, you know, because we're not going to be around forever to monitor this. And even our estates, you know, it's just too. So it amuses me as much as anything. It's like the record getting a couple hundred dollars, or people are interested in this. It's amusing, but I don't mind. And we've been bootlegged a lot. It did bother me that they ripped off Jeff's artwork. You know, Jeff is an old family friend, a very talented artist. So I had to give him a little shout out there.
Well said. So let's jump back in time.
Well said. I put the word motherfuckers on my album cover, and you're telling me well said? Thank you.
Listen, sometimes no other word will do except for the heavy MF. But
I'm glad my father, the English teacher, isn't around to see this conversation. Okay?
so let's jump back in time. So Detention was formed by three brothers, Paul, Kevin, and Daniel. So how did you guys get involved in punk? Was one of the three brothers, the older brothers, that introduced the other two to punk rock? How did the band get started, and how did you guys get interested in punk in kind of the early ages of punk rock?
I was patient zero. I was the Typhoid Mary of punk rock in my hometown. I had lived out of my work took me out of New Jersey, and opportunity to be in places where there was a lively music scene. And, you know, I just kind of fell into it in that I was a curious person. I've always, since I was a little boy, I've always been a music guy. And I started to see that there was something going on, and it caught my attention, and I pursued it. And it was really quite interesting, just little things, you know, an ad in the back of a Circus or Cream magazine or something like that. And it amuses me also that there's people listening to this going, "What magazine? What magazine?" And perhaps others, they're going, "What's a magazine?" But I'd look at the ads and send away for stuff. I would read newspapers and see who was playing where and try to suss out what was going on. And when I moved back to New Jersey, I had already kind of indoctrinated Paul and Daniel, and they were music guys as well. And I started to play stuff for them, and the interest was there. Eventually, Daniel and I started doing some DJ work at WPRB in Princeton. So we really were fortunate in that we were able to hear a lot of stuff and talk to other music people and see what was going on. Now, that's what happened there, but they took to it. Like, I remember bringing home Nevermind the Bollocks, you know, and playing it for people. And it was, while it wasn't love or hate, you know, the people who got into it really got into it. So when it was time to start the band, I think I had two like willing confederates, you know, people, you know, not only, you know, did I know, but I knew them, their attitudes and so forth. And I was like, these would be two good guys to have in my band when I start one. And I did.
And so were your parents cool with it? Were they like, how dare you get involved in that crazy rock world? How supportive were your parents of the punk band, of the band?
They were quite supportive. One of the important things early on was I was getting laid off from a union job, and I saw which way it was going to go. And with my last paycheck, literally, I went to a local music store and bought a cheap bass. And the lady up the street, her son used to play. He was out of state at college or something. And I bought the amp off of her cheap, and I was set up. Only problem being, I didn't know a note on that son of a bitch. All right. Kind of a problem. But I would invite people over and go, hey, look, I bought a bass, you know, and I'd pluck on the strings and I go, oh, that's very interesting. But my brother Paul suggested one of our high school classmates, Rodney Mateic. And Rodney came over with his guitar. My father was a speech therapist in the public schools. And when he built an addition on the house, he also included an office so he could see students during the summer, follow along. The office was soundproofed, was heavily soundproofed, so that if he had a student in there, you know, they wouldn't hear, you know, the Carol Burnett show going on next door or the kids running around or whatever. Rodney and I would go in there, close the door over, plug in our amps, and start to have at it. So, you know, thank you, Dad. But I would like to relate. At one point, I was living with my mom and dad, and we had a show in New Brunswick. And I was leaving the house, and God bless them, you know, they try to keep up. And I was leaving the house with my bass, and my mom, being very hip, goes, oh, you have a gig tonight? And I was like, yeah, Mom, I have a gig. And she goes, oh, really? I said, yeah, one of the touring California bands is playing New Brunswick and open up for them. She's, oh, that's nice. What's the name of their group? And I go, the Circle Jerks. And she goes, I'm sorry I asked.
That's fun. Do you have any memories from the Circle Jerk show? Was that like a super crazy show? Was it another gig? What was that show like?
It was fun to have them in downtown New Brunswick. We played at a place called Patrick's, and not surprisingly, it was turning into a real questionable neighborhood. Not surprisingly, but we're upstairs. And there was like a hole had been punched through the wall. So we would just stick our heads in. And it's like, you're Greg Hetson, you know, I know you, you know, and they're, you know, trying to enjoy their hot pasta, you know, the baked ziti that they got in their rider. You know what I mean? All fun. You know, some of the best shows I've ever been to were not at some, you know, hockey arena or, you know, amphitheater or something like that. Some of the best shows I ever went were in these just seedy little places, you know what I mean? Where you could really be a part of it.
I guess the first single, one of the most iconic singles by the Attention, was Dead Rock and Rollers on side A, El Salvador on side B. Dead Rock and Rollers is what we played a few minutes ago, is such a great track. It's funny, it's edgy, and it's sort of a response to Jim Carroll's People Who Die, who the band kind of takes shots at in the song. And right. They also take shots on Barry Manilow, and they're like, why couldn't it be Barry Manilow?
Well, that's a no-brainer. That's Paul. We had a song that Rodney opened up. He would play Stairway to Heaven, and then we go into this like thrash number. If you ever heard No God by the Germs, it was something similar to that. But we would just do it and fool around, and Paul put the words to it, and it became Dead Rock and Rollers. I'd like to point out for anybody listening that I admire the music of just about all those people. You know, they were not without their own talents, and they deserved recognition, but they made bad life choices. Let's face it. Jim got in there not just because of People Who Died, but because the only time that I've been thrown out of an establishment, and let me say that again so you don't think you're mishearing me, the only time that I remember being thrown out of an establishment was a Jim Carroll show in San Francisco when I was out there. And they were supposed to have this, Bay Area committee against the conscription. You know, this is in the, you know, the early 80s. And it was like some anti-draft thing. And all these bands that I liked were going to be there. And when I showed up high and drunk, it turns out a lot of those bands weren't there. And you got the Jim Carroll band. Now, Jim, God bless him, he was cool. But he would get up there and you think like I ever had an attitude. He would get up there and go, this is a song about my friends who died. So shut up and listen. And I was like, OK, you know, hey, a fellow New Yorker. All right. You know, welcome. You know what? And I don't know. I may have made a move towards the stage that was misinterpreted. And I was literally given the bum's rush. You know, they got you by the collar and in the belt and out the door you go. And I was in this joint for three nights. It was at the Mabuhay I got thrown out of. And I've been this place three nights a week. I knew everybody. Everybody knew me. And I got tossed out on the sidewalk. And the bouncer was standing there. I go, hey, man. He goes, hey, man. I go, hey, man. And he's like, hey, man. I was like, all right, I'll see you next week. So, you know, not, you know, Jim was a great writer, you know. And, you know, I read the Basketball Diaries and it was brilliant. But, you know, oh, well.
I like the Mabuhay. Did you run into like Jell-O or the Avengers?
Yes,
or
I did. Yes, I did. I got there. I arrived in the Bay Area a couple of days before I turned 21. And the first night I was in town, I went to the Mabuhay. And it was, I think, Merry Monday. The Tattooed Vegetables and the Bags were up from L.A. This is the first night I'm in town. You know what I mean? And you know, I got carded, and I think Dirk Dirksen, the manager, might have been working it, and he saw my situation. I had, you know, one night I was sitting there having, you know, and I was going there like a lot, and I only had 10 days to go, and I was sitting having a soda one night, tap on my shoulder, I turn around, it's Dirk, and he's handing me a lit joint, you know, in the club, and I was writing letters to New Jersey going, I think I'm going to like this place, But yes, I'd be sitting there and, you know, like a couple of guys from crime would be sitting there at the table and I would just look at them. And I was like this hick from the sticks from New Jersey. And I would look at these guys and go, oh, man, you know, these guys got it going on. But, you know, it wasn't like a rock star thing. You know, it was just me getting used to that. It wasn't like a rock star thing. And I really appreciated that because, you know, you would see him afterwards. You'd see him beforehand. But boy, what a, you know, the right guy at the right place at the right time. You know, imagine my good fortune. You know what I mean? I got there in, gosh, I think it was like April or May of 1979. And, you know, it was like the rise of hardcore to a point, you know, before it got ridiculous and, you know, decline of Western civilization hardcore. But, you know, I'd go and see Black Flag. I'd go and see the Go-Go's if they, you know, when they came up, stuff like that. And the Bay Area groups were fabulous.
Well, very, very cool. But getting back to detention is with tracks like Bad Dream and Beach and Anxiety Attack and Dead Rock and Rollers, we do see kind of that nihilistic punk edge with a tinge of humor. And so I guess my question is, was that by design? Did you guys sit down and figure out the angle that you're going to take, which is kind of my favorite angle of punk, or is this just kind of what popped out and it was like good fun? What was the idea behind the band, if you will?
You know, it was four smart asses. You know, when we were sitting around by ourselves and, you know, it was almost like nothing was off limits. You know, as this music has been re-released, I've had to listen to it recently and it really occurs to me like, wow. I mean, you listen to like Teenage Panty Fantasy, you know what I mean? I mean, it's put out there with a sense of humor. Would it fly now? I don't know. You know, this is from, you know, literally it's 40 years ago. I don't think attitudes have changed so much, but I was like, I was like, you think teenage panty fantasy is somehow offensive? Wait to hear cowboy, you know, or dead rock and rollers. You know, you have to have a sense of humor about it. You know, we're just not to be like at the, you know, at the amusement park with a little BB gun shooting down targets. You know, this is how it occurred to us. If you look at a lot of these songs, they have the subject matter itself might have some real serious import to it. Nuclear war, you know, social chaos, you know, being let down by the government, things of this nature. But if you put it, you know, in a way that's humorous, you have people's attention better, I think. You know, when you're a public speaker, open up with a joke, you know, get everybody relaxed, get everybody on your side. Maybe they'll listen more. Now, that being said, I'm very happy that we were able to say what we wanted, how we wanted. And we did. But also, please, please keep in mind that it should also be apparent to anybody who listens to our music or even sees, you know, how we put it out, that primarily we are entertainers. You know, we are entertainers. If you want to hear about how horrible nuclear war actually is, go get a couple Discharge singles. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. That's so the groups that did it with humor. Sorry, Dead Kennedys. Adrenaline OD in Bedlam from New Jersey. Oh, there's handfuls of them. Those are the groups I admire, because you can say what you want, but if you say it with a sense of humor, maybe you can catch a couple more people that way.
I agree with you 100%. I think that's what makes this collection so effective and the band so effective, is that it totally rocks, totally snaps. It's got the scary parts, but it does have, you know, the wry smile hidden in there, which I like a lot.
There were five of us, and my father was an English teacher and a debate coach.
Ah.
So really, of an award-winning high school debate team that went to the Nationals in Texas. And like, if you had a point of view at the Shields dinner table, you had better be able to back it up. So there was that side of it. But if you got the four of us together, you know, myself, Daniel, Paul, and either Rodney or Mark, the guitar player, and it was all the same. Everybody was breaking balls. Everybody was making fun, because life can be grim, you know. So, I mean, the humor just naturally came out.
You will actually, to go off that, not to be too depressing, but quite sadly, the vocalist, your brother, Paul, has passed away. Yeah. So what's it like hearing your deceased, and RIP, my condolences, what's it like hearing your deceased brother on record? What is that must have some kind of strange conjuring, I would think.
Yeah, it does. And I will tell you that before this came out, every once in a while, you know, sometimes I would listen to Detention because I wanted to hear his voice, mm-hmm. literally. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wanted to, but I couldn't, for the very same reason. You know what I mean? Depending sure. on what the mood was. But, he got a lot of extra years. He had leukemia, and he was diagnosed, and he had like 11 bonus years. It helped a lot that he was a very fit person and he took care of himself. So he got, you know, he got bonus years. But like I said, sometimes I listen to it just to hear his voice. And you know what? He did a lot of the lyrics, and I'm very proud of him as a lyricist, because the other night I was driving in my car and I was listening to the CD version, and I listened to Dead Rock and Rollers and something else, and I laughed. You know what I mean? I played on that. You know, it's not like I haven't heard it in the last 40 years, but yeah. I don't know whether it was Barry Manilow, or, you know, when Paul goes, "What are you waiting for? Do it!" You know, the glee, the absolute conviction in the delivery, and I just started to laugh, and I said, "You know what? I hope somebody gets that out of it, that they literally will sit there and listen to it and laugh out loud, because I did the other night, and I made that music,
well,
you know."
Yeah. Well, it certainly does have its fair share of yucks in it. I got two very obscure questions for you. A person named Greg Frey is thanked on this. Greg Frey was in one of my favorite obscure bands, The Groceries, and also I think he became the
You've
manager.
Done your homework. You've I done think your he, homework.
I think he became the manager of Ween or somehow helped out Ween to some degree. So my first question is, did you have any connection to Groceries, a long forgotten but astoundingly great New Jersey band, similar to Detention, except for Detention isn't long forgotten. People know about Detention. Detention is great. But did you ever have any interaction with Groceries or Greg Fred?
Yes, I did. They would play them on WPRB. They had a great song called Higher High School Girls. And okay, they had a song called, I just realized the irony, Higher High School Girls, and then Detention, Teenage Panty Fantasy. Where is this going? Sorry. Yes, I used to go see, there was a place out on 27, which is 27 is the highway that runs from New Brunswick basically to Princeton. And I used to go to this place called the Tin Lizzie Garage, and they would have live music there. And there was a strip joint next door, so you had to go, you know. But I would go see the Groceries, and I'd be out there with my Bud Long Neck, you know, getting a good package on, and I would heckle these guys, you know. I don't know. I don't think it was Greg, but one of them had like real people, like they have like real like curly hair, like sticky uppy hair. It doesn't like grow down. It just kind of grows out. You know what
I'm
saying?
That's Rich Lather, the singer.
Yeah, maybe. But I'd be out there on the dance floor going, sue your barber, you know? kind of, we tune because we care. The Birds, 1966, you know? But they were fun. That was a good group. And I didn't know till later that Greg was one of the Groceries. And he was the guy who did a lot of the recordings that came after our LP was released. And he had literally a home studio in Manville, and we went over there, and he was super easy to work with. And he liked working with us, especially the mixing was Greg sitting at the mixing board, and Detention was just over in the side of the room making themselves melon balls. Remember melon balls?
I don't think so. Unless you mean actual melon balls.
M melon liqueur.
I know the scooper that you use for the actual like cantaloupe.
Oh, that's nice and helpful. I'm talking about booze. All right.
You can put the booze in the balls.
No, melon balls. It was a melon liqueur. It was one of those drinks that was fashionable for like 90 days in the 1980s, you know. So we're just sitting over in the corner getting all code red and shit, you know, while he mixed it. Turned out pretty good. And we were easy to work with.
Even more obscure reference, I think somewhere in here, Raritan is mentioned, or Raritan Township.
Right.
Did you ever run into Pete Vent'Antonio or the band Sticks and Stones, or is that a little bit after you guys, just out of curiosity?
Sticks and Stones I have heard of, but not a lot of familiarity. Our Raritan is the town of Raritan, you know, which abuts Hillsboro, where we're from. And that was where Little Apple Studios was. Lenny Grosso was a musician, you know, very much similarities to Greg Fry. Lenny was a musician. He had a very nice studio in Raritan. It was an old brick factory, so it was really cool. And I would be the first there, and I'd go there. I'd drive there in my Plymouth Horizon. And I'd sit out front waiting, listening to Nets basketball on the AM, you know, so that's how I psyched myself up to be a punk rock musician. But we were very fortunate with those two guys. And, you know, they were patient because, you know, we had some experience in the studio, but they're very patient with us. And hey, look, I'd be lying if I didn't say, well, I listen to stuff and I hear every little mistake. I hear every little thing that I would have done over or somehow done differently. But speaking of done, what's done is done. You know what I mean? So I think we had some good help and it turned out well. I'll tell you this. I'm proud of it. I'm glad we did it. Some people are going to listen to it and they're listening to some of the lyrics and the attitude. And then they go, oh, my goodness. You know, but you know what? I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did it too, man. I'm not blowing smoke at you, Trini. I really do dig this CD. A few last questions for you, Kevin, then we'll let you go. But so Was there a sudden end to the tension, or was this just kind of a slow drifting apart? What was the end of the tension? What caused that?
I've described it, or tried to describe to people, is we just kind of petered out, that novelty of being in a band, and especially one that was doing okay, had essentially worn off. So, you know, you start to grind a little bit. I mean, we were writing and we were gigging, but I think essentially, you know, for lack of any better description, it seemed like no one was really interested in booking gigs anymore. And I think that's one of the few ways I can describe it. Myself and Mark, the guitar player, started fooling around with a garage group, which eventually turned into something else. And, maybe a couple years after detention wrapped up, I found myself in a ska band, for goodness sakes. That worked out well for me. That was, at the time, that was more successful than detention. But, you know, detention has obviously legs. But it just kind of nobody felt like booking gigs anymore. So it was really, it started very organically, if you follow the story, and it ended organically, you know. But I'm proud. Your descriptions of it are pretty spot on. This stuff really moves. You know what I mean? You listen to something like Anti-A. Sorry, man. You know, if you're listening to that song like that and you don't feel like you want to move, or, you know, it's kind of difficult to just sit still, then we're doing what we hope to do. This is not music that you play, you know, when you invite friends over for dinner and you're having some butternut squash, bisque, you know, and some artisanal bread, you know, and, you know, locally produced wine. No, this is like when your friends come over and the menu is Bud cans. All right.
what ska band were you in?
I played trumpet with Bigger Thomas, who came together in the summer of 88, and they're widely recognized as New Jersey's first ska band. So boy, is that weird the way that worked out. Cause I'm a trumpet player. There you go.
that is weird, because
I'm coming out of the closet. I'm a trumpet player.
that isn't true, because that's after two tone, but before the third wave. Just very briefly, exactly. Did you ever play with the ska band Terrorist from New York City?
No. Somebody lent me a compilation that had one of their songs on. Mm-hmm. A compilation, I think it was called "Give 'Em the Boot," and the Terrorists had a song on there. But no, I'm not familiar. But boy, you name them, we play. You know, Skedank, Skinnerbox. You know, Ruder Than You from Philadelphia. We played with the Scottalites a couple times. That was thrilling in its own quiet kind of marijuana-induced haze way.
Well, that's pretty cool, playing with the Scottalites, and also, and more, of course, Skinnerbox, the band that we developed into King Django and the Slackers and so forth. So there you go. I'll tell you, Kevin has been all over. This is cool, Kevin. Thanks for coming on the show. Just a couple last questions for you. Looking back, what does detention represent to you?
Do it yourself, you know, do it yourself. We didn't have any kind of, none of us had band experience, even though, some of us had, experience playing. We had no experience relating to being in a band or anything. So it was completely organic. It was a completely do it yourself, because while there were other bands in the area, you know, everybody had to kind of come up by themselves. Even though there was a scene, you had to kind of, so you know what to me, it represents almost like, you know, a stick in the eye of corporate rock, you know, that, because after a while in my life, I said, you know what, I'm not going to Madison Square Garden anymore. You know what I mean? You know, I decided this is for me. And it was really, you know, hey man, I'm, you know, Don't be misinformed by the message behind Dead Rock and Rollers. Dead Rock and Rollers, men, is like a joke, even if you think it's, you know, sick humor. And I guess it is. But, you know, I got nothing against all those other bands and stuff. But this is kind of two fingers up to like the music establishment, you know, that someone's going to come over and I'm going to sit there and, you know, listen intently to their lesson that they're coming down to present to me. No bullshit, man. Get involved, you know, make something of your own. So when I think of that, I'm happy because there was not really anybody quite like us around. And that's really saying something, because there wasn't.
Well, I agree. The band definitely is unique. The I guess what we'll call deluxe 12-inch single re-release with an entire EP on the B side is out now via Left 4 Dead. That's Dead Rock and Rolls in El Salvador on the A side, 45 RPM. Then the flip side, 8 more bonus tracks, and it sounds amazing. Then in about a year or so, according to the liner notes, there's going to be a 2-CD anthology that has everything they ever recorded, which I'm really, really looking forward to. That's going to be awesome. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you want the listeners to check out aside from the Detention Dead Rock and Rollers out on Left 4 Dead at leftfordeadrecords.com? Anything else you want them to check out or think about?
Yes. Big ups to James Reynolds with Left 4 Dead. You know, when it looked like we were going to be involved and we were going to do something together, he sent me some product that he has produced in the past. And, you know, I think it's really a labor of love. If you look, it's a good looking package. You want to own it, you know. Big up to James Reynolds, because, you know, he's doing a service. And, you know, it would be my happiness if somebody goes, oh, I heard about that on a podcast, or I saw that on their website, and they buy it and they go, where has this been? I love this. Wouldn't that be great?
You know. Well, let's make it happen. So we're going to close this on out with El Salvador, the second track from the new record. And once again, that's Detention Dead Rock and Rollers out on Left 4 Dead. And Kevin, thanks a lot, man. It's been a real pleasure having you on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me, John. Had a lot of fun.
Cheers.
All right.
Send me most of all, amen.